This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I wanted to start with Bruce Barcott. His book, Weed the People, that's Weed the People, is about how the state of Washington and Colorado first legalized recreational use. I think you have to say that 30 years ago, if you had told me that we'd see the day when marijuana was legal and maybe on the way toward national legalization, I wouldn't have believed it. How did public opinion change so quickly on this?
I have to agree with you. 30 years ago, there's no way I would have believed this would change. I think that it changed gradually. I think, you know, the modern era really began with the AIDS crisis in San Francisco in the 1980s when gay men were suffering from wasting disease, one of the manifestations of AIDS. They couldn't eat, they couldn't keep food down, and cannabis stimulates appetite. You know, you get the munchies and it quells nausea. So people there started up marijuana buyers clubs, and eventually San Francisco passed legalization for medical use. In 96, California passed medical use statewide, and other states followed suit. And then I think, you know, what that medical legalization did was kind of enact a kind of pilot project where different states stuck a toe in the water and the walls of civilization didn't crumble. And then that led to the first adult use legalization votes in 2012 in Colorado and Washington. And I, too, was skeptical about it, but it worked in my own state and my own community.
For the first time in history, cannabis reform is going to be an issue in the 2020 election. Nearly all the Democratic frontrunners support legalization. How did this become such a big deal in the race, and why is it such a big deal?
I'm kind of shocked, actually, at how many Democratic candidates have essentially just turned and embraced legalization. The only person who really has reservations is Joe Biden.
Right.
And in the previous election, the only person who was for legalization was Bernie Sanders. And essentially, it is in the numbers. You know, every poll that comes out now about adult use legalization hits 65%, 68% support. And it's support that's not red, it's not blue, it's across the board. This is an issue that doesn't divide down party lines, but Democrats see it as a way to essentially embrace younger folks because the breakdown in support is very much generational. The oldest demographic does not like it, is not in favor of it. The youngest demographic is absolutely in favor of it.
Well, Bernie Sanders, though, has young supporters, but he's not a young guy. Neither, and Elizabeth Warren isn't either. What does it say about Biden that he's not supporting legalization?
The thing about, I mean, Biden was notoriously one of the people who was pushing the crime bill back in the 90s. You know, the other element that's come into play with this is our over-incarceration crisis and our growing national awareness of racial disparities in law enforcement. And really, there's one book that is like the silent spring of this movement and of cannabis legalization, and it's Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow. That really opened up a lot of people's eyes, and I wish, frankly, Joe Biden would read it.
Now, what about the Republicans? John Boehner, the former speaker, John Boehner is on the board of one of the country's largest cannabis corporations. Why is this being an issue for the Republicans?
It's the weirdest thing. I mean, Jeff Sessions was sort of the last of the great drug warriors, and even members of his party sort of were baffled by why he rode that hobby horse of marijuana prohibition so hard. It was like an obsession with him, you know. And his successor really doesn't give a darn about cannabis. So I don't know. We've seen this with a number of politicians where once they're out of office, all of a sudden they're running to join the new legal cannabis industry. John Boehner is sort of the leader in that sense. But I think you'll see a lot more of those folks coming into this industry because it is booming.
Now, you were living in Seattle when the state of Washington voted to legalize marijuana, but you originally weren't in support of it. What ended up changing your mind on this?
It was back in November 2012, and it was a dinner with friends. We were all discussing who we were going to vote for. And we were going down the ballot, and marijuana legalization was on our ballot in Washington State. And I said, look, I'm really kind of on the fence, leaning no on this. I don't like pot. It's not my thing. I worry about my kids. And a good friend of mine actually was a lawyer at the time for the ACLU, and the ACLU was behind the effort in Washington State. She turned on me and she practically poked me in the chest. She said, you know what? Nobody gives a shit about whether you like or don't like pot. This is not about you. This is about, hundreds of thousands of people, mostly people of color, being thrown into jail for something that's really less harmful than alcohol.
Mm. You saw Washington legalize marijuana, and 11 states have now done the same. They've joined Washington. Which states have done this really well, and have any states done it poorly?
Yeah, I think that Washington and Colorado did it well under the circumstances. They were first. They were the pioneers, and so their laws were not perfect. I think the better laws that are coming on now, there's a lot of eyes on Illinois. The law in Illinois is like 615 pages long. It's insane. Hmm. But there are a lot of provisions written into that law that weren't in other states that people are very hopeful about. It deals with things like expungement of past convictions for marijuana. I think it addresses or at least touches on things like workplace discrimination and parental rights so that, Child Protective Services isn't going to come take your kids away if you're using cannabis legally. There are a lot of little micro issues that have emerged since the big issue of simple legalization has come out in 2012.
What about the business aspect of this? California had stars in its eyes, and they had huge problems, as it turned out, with their rollout. The officials there predicted $1 billion in tax revenue, and they ended up with less than half of that. What happened?
Yeah, part of that is the fact that California's illegal industry is so entrenched and so enormous, and it gets by not just with feeding its own state. I mean, it produces seven times as much cannabis as California residents consume. So it's going into the rest of the country. And then the regulations in California were pretty tough. And so it made it pretty difficult and very expensive for folks to move from the illegal space into a legal space to get their licenses and get security. And it took a lot of money and investment to do that. And so they've been having a harder time moving people from the illegal market into the legal market.
Who's going to make a lot of money off of marijuana? Last year, I think the marijuana industry was valued at around $10 billion. And the projections mm-hmm. are to go much, much, much higher than that in the future. Who are the big players in the industry who's making a fortune?
Fewer people are making fortunes than you might think, actually, at this point. I think that as we go along, what we're seeing right now is the larger players coming in. Our investors are coming in. Large investors are coming in quietly. Beer companies are coming in quietly as well.
Which ones?
Constellation Brands, which is the distributor for Corona Beer, they have a significant investment in Canopy Growth, which is the largest Canadian cannabis company.
Are we going to see multinational marijuana conglomerates?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, we're seeing, obviously, Canada has full federal legalization at this point. Germany has full legal medical marijuana. Mexico is coming online soon. The Mexican Supreme Court has declared that the country's prohibition on cannabis cannot stand. And so they're working on establishing a legal system right now. We should see it in the next year or two. So ultimately, this will be a global industry. It's just right now we're still in the phase where in the United States, it is very much a state-by-state industry. Those walls are very high, but those walls will come down.
Now, part of what impressed me so much about your book is that it's very shrewd and fair-minded. You're covering this as a journalist, and you're looking at data, you're talking to both sides. It's clear that you come out on the side of legalization, but what's the most convincing argument that you found against full legalization?
I don't have one. I mean, honestly, I think the initially the biggest arguments against it was that it would unleash a flood of real public health issues. That was the main concern. And if that happened, I think we would have seen states draw back. I think we would have seen other states not adopt legal policies. And we haven't seen, there's been no state that's gone back and said, you know, we did this, we tried it, and we don't like it, we're going to withdraw. One of the things that pushed me into the area of saying, yes, this is the right thing to do, was that ultimately the data and the science, I felt, were on the side of legalization, that the folks who were scrambling to stop this movement were picking data, picking studies that were deficient or weren't telling the whole story. And I ultimately did not trust their data. I didn't trust their science. I didn't trust their narrative.
And that includes the data on the correlation between marijuana usage and schizophrenia. I hasten to say it's not a causation, a correlation.
Yeah, that's one of those issues where, as an editor and a science writer, I love that issue because it is so unsettled. I took a plunge into it and spent a whole chapter in my book looking at it. And what I came away with, looking at what little science, what little research does exist, is that if you have a family history of schizophrenia, if you have a family history of mental illness, you should know that and do not touch cannabis until you're well into your 20s if you want to. And then the scientists don't think that cannabis causes schizophrenia. The most they can say is that it could hasten the onset. In other words, if you're 18 and you're susceptible to schizophrenia, if you start going in and smoking pot every day, that could hasten the emergence of schizophrenia. And what we do know about schizophrenia is the longer it can be delayed, the later that emergence comes, the more likely a person is able to manage it and deal with it. I mean, some sort of connection between schizophrenia and cannabis or the cannabinoid system does exist. But to say there's some sort of tide of psychosis rising, it's preposterous. It's just not there. Nobody can point to it.
So we're in this netherland of 11 states having legalized marijuana, but it's still, according to the federal government, illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of confusing, not just for me, but for a lot of people in the industry. How can this be legal and illegal at the same time in economic terms?
Law is confusing. there is the law, and then there is its enforcement. And those are two very different things. Federal leaders like the Attorney General and U.S. attorneys set priorities about what laws they'll focus on and enforce. And back in 2012, the Obama administration essentially saw the vote in Colorado and Washington, and they said, okay, look, we're going to let you proceed. We're going to watch you very carefully, and we're going to let you proceed, see what happens. Keep it tight. We don't want to see any leakage. We don't want to see marijuana flowing out of these states to other states. We don't want to see kids getting into it. We're going to watch and see. We're going to keep our hands off, and we're going to focus on higher priorities. And that has essentially been the detente that we have been working with ever since. It's okay. The problem really comes with minor aspects that aren't so minor, like banking.
Right. The big banks have been pretty reluctant to touch cannabis since it's not legal to the federal government.
And that means those companies can't open checking accounts. More importantly, they can't get bank loans. There are no lines of credit. So to get in this business and stay in this business and grow, you've got to be independently wealthy, or you've got to have a rich uncle, or you've got to take on investors. That's the only way to grow.
Bruce, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks. Anytime. It's been a pleasure.
Bruce Barcott is the author of Weed the People, and he's senior editor for the cannabis website called Leafly.